Good evening. It's certainly a pleasure to be with you again. Come to the last night of the Vacation Bible School, and I've thoroughly enjoyed my time with you. I think we've studied some things, hopefully, that have been useful to you. I know it's been useful to me to go back and study these things about our faith and about building our faith and about learning to see God and know God. And tonight we're going to talk a little bit about sharing the Word of God. But I just want to extend my thank you again to you for having me. I've really enjoyed my time here, and I hope that you've enjoyed the studies that we've gone through. Let's go ahead and turn over to Amos chapter 7 as we begin tonight. Amos chapter 7. And who remembers their memory verse for tonight? Oh, that's the wrong class. I'm sorry. It was the entire book of Zephaniah. Who got it? We're going to talk about evangelism tonight and about sharing the Word of God. And I want to start just by talking about how we look through the Scriptures and the men that we see that God chooses to spread His Word, or just in general, to do His work. Are they always the kind of people that that we might choose if we were choosing them for the task? Are they always the kind of people we expect God to choose? Not always. When we think back to the book of Exodus and we think about Moses, when God chose to free Israel from Egyptian bondage and to take His people out of that land, did He choose just the most eloquent and the most confident person to do that? No, we see this this picture of Moses, a man who did not have confidence in his abilities, and we'll see that later on. Also, like in 2 Kings 1 and verse 7, and keep your finger there in Amos, we'll be there in a minute. But in 2 Kings 1 and verse 7, the picture that we get of the prophet Elijah is not exactly the kind of person we would think God would choose to be His prophet. 2 Kings 1 and verse 7 says, "Then he said to them, 'What kind of man was it who came up to meet you and told you these words?' So they answered him, 'Well, it was a hairy man, wearing a leather belt around his waist.' And he said, 'It's Elijah the Tishbite.'" So when we read about some of the men that God chose, we look there at Elijah and we see a man whose physical appearance is dominated by hair and leather. And it's not always the picture of the prophet of God that we might think of. And of course, we know John the Baptist, who ate locusts and wild honey and things like that. Sometimes there were a little bit of eccentricities in some of these men that God chose. And we think about Peter and Andrew and James and John, when Jesus chose His very first disciples who would carry His message throughout the earth and who would later become apostles. Did He choose just the most well-known and the most well-studied and most reputable men He could find to do that? And the most eloquent men? No, we see Him choosing a bunch of fishermen, and that's who He trains to spread His Word. And we certainly, when we think about odd people for God to choose, or odd people for Jesus to choose to share His message, who's one person that we directly go to that we would never expect him to choose? Well, the Apostle Paul, we definitely think there, who a man prior to becoming a Christian was a persecutor of Christians. And so I think that what we get from these examples when we see these men of God who we don't necessarily expect Him to choose to communicate His message, what we see is that God can use anyone to do what He wants to do. He can use anyone as a medium to spread His Word. And I'll tell you, still, when we read those examples and we learn those lessons, still, simply put, there are a lot of people in the church who don't seem to think of themselves as evangelists. And there are a lot of people in the church who think, well, I would like to do that, and I would like to go out and spread the Word, but I think that that's probably somebody else's duty, and I'm not the best speaker, or I'm not the best at this, and so, I'll kind of sit back and let somebody else do that. And we remember we were talking about James chapter 2 yesterday, or I believe it was James chapter 1, where you know, you have this person that comes to you and is destitute of food and clothing and all these things, and you tell them, go in peace and be warm and filled. And that's kind of what we think of when we think of some Christians who don't want to evangelize. Everybody knows someone who needs the gospel. And when we don't share that with them, we think that somebody else will do it, it's basically saying, well, go in peace, be warm and filled. But we know they're not getting the gospel. And I think that we should take great comfort in something that that Amos said long ago in Amos 7. In Amos chapter 7, remember that Amaziah, the priest there at Bethel, he comes to Amos, and what is he telling him to do? He's not happy with his prophesying, and he tells Amos to do what? It says, get out of Bethel and go back to Judah, go back to Tekoa where you're from. And notice what he says to Amos there in verse 12. It says, go, you seer, flee to the land of Judah, there eat bread, and there prophesy, but never again prophesy at Bethel. For it is the king's sanctuary, and it is the royal residence. And he had gone to the king and told him, look, you know, Amos is saying things about you, and he's prophesying against you, and we want him out of here. And what did Amos say to Amaziah? I didn't ask for this. The Lord chose me. Look what he says there in verse 14. I was no prophet, nor was I a son of a prophet. I was a sheep breeder and a tender of sycamore fruit. Then the Lord took me as I followed the flock, and the Lord said to me, go prophesy to my people Israel. Now therefore hear the word of the Lord. You say, do not prophesy against Israel, and do not spout against the house of Isaac. And he goes to pronounce a judgment against him. But the point is what Amos says. He says, I was no prophet. I wasn't the son of a prophet. But God came and chose me, and now this is what I'm doing. And you, Amaziah, you'd do the same if you were chosen like I was. Hopefully he would. And so what we learn from that is, do you have to be a designated preacher or the son of a preacher or some great position, or we think of a great position, do you have to be in that kind of a position in order to spread the gospel, in order to evangelize to people? No. And sometimes we designate these positions, and you know, we have our designated preacher in the church who we might think, well, he does all the evangelism for this church, but that's not the case, as we see in the Scriptures. You don't have to be someone special in that sense. You don't have to know someone special. All you have to know is that the message you've got is a special message, and it's one that needs to be heard. Let's talk about the method in which God has chosen to spread the gospel. How did God choose to communicate the knowledge of His Son Jesus Christ to the world? Did He decide, well, you know, let me just zap everybody and they'll all have the knowledge of His love and everything? How did he decide to have the whole world know about His Son? What was the means He chose? How does the Word get out there? Preaching, teaching, human communication. Jesus chose His disciples. He sent them out into the world. We talk about the Great Commission. Now, could God have chosen to directly reveal everything to every person and just zap us, you know, at some point in our life, and we just know everything and we know all about Christ's love and decide whether or not we want to obey? Could He have done it that way? Sure, I suppose He could have. He could have directly imparted all that knowledge of His love and His Son to every single man, but He didn't do things that way. And in fact, we've got a neat example in Acts chapter 10. The centurion Cornelius. Let's go over to Acts chapter 10. And starting in verse 1 in Acts chapter 10, it says, there was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion of what was called the Italian regiment, a devout man, and one who feared God with all his household, who gave alms generously to the people, and prayed to God always. About the ninth hour of the day, he saw clearly in a vision an angel of God coming in and saying to him, Cornelius. And when he observed him, he was afraid and said, What is it, Lord? So he said to him, Your prayers and your alms have come up for a memorial before God. So we see Cornelius, and he's a man of prayer. He's been praying to God, and God sends this angel to him. And so when God sends this angel and essentially answers his prayers in a way, the angel comes to Cornelius, and does he tell him all about Jesus Christ and tell him what he needs to do to be saved, this angel? No, in fact, what does he tell him to do? And you think about it, I mean, that would have been so easy. That would have been the perfect chance to directly impart his knowledge to someone in that way, is have this angel come and tell Cornelius, well, you know, tell him all about Jesus Christ, tell him he needed to be baptized to be saved and all of this. Could have communicated it to him in that way. But instead he says, you send all the way to Joppa and get Simon Peter to come to you. Isn't that interesting that that's the way the Lord chose to do that? Yes. Mm-hmm. And so in any case, that's the means by which God has chosen. Yeah, John, did you? Yeah. And they're looking for it. Yeah. And, you know, we can skepticize and try and figure out, well, you know, why did God choose preaching? And I suppose there are a number of different reasons we could look at. But in any case, that's what Christians are to do. We're to go out and spread the gospel in this way. That's the way that he's chosen.
What we talked about in the last few nights about faith without words.
Mm-hmm. And we're about to talk about some things that might make us reluctant to spread the gospel. I know one thing that makes a lot of people reluctant is that they're afraid of if they're going to communicate to their family or friends the gospel. A lot of people are afraid what that's going to do to their relationship, aren't they? Isn't that sometimes a fear of ours? But that's one of the points in the gospel, is that these relationships that we have, you can communicate through those. And we need to take advantage of that and be able to spread the gospel to those who are around us, because the most likely converts are those with whom we have a relationship or we have some ground with. And so we need to take advantage of that. Was there anything else before we continue? Okay. Let's discuss, like I was saying, a few things that might hinder us or make us reluctant to spread the gospel. And the first one I want to note, something that we might be reluctant to spread the gospel about, I think complacency plays a big part in some Christians who don't spread the gospel. Complacency. They're comfortable with the way that their church is. They're comfortable with the way things are going and just content with the way things are in church. Do we live in an age of church shopping? We sure do. And it hasn't always been that way, has it? We live in an age where, especially if you live in a bigger city, you can kind of go from place to place and choose which church you want to worship with and choose, you know, which group of people you fit with. And I suppose in some respects that's a good thing, that you can go around and see what's a good fit and where you'd like to worship, and that's a blessing to have. But sometimes what that produces is people who are looking around and saying, well, you know, that church is too big over there, and that church is too small over there, and this one's just the right size, or, you know, this one has just what I'm looking for. And some people who are looking for a big church, well, they might join a big church, and then maybe that church has some problems and start losing some members, and then they say, well, this church is not big anymore, I'm going to find another church. And then there are those who are looking for a small church, and you know, they might go to a small church and help the work there, and it starts to build up, and once it gets too big, they're out because they wanted a small church. So that can be kind of a dangerous thing sometimes, and you know, might start feeling too congested if it gets too big. But yeah, we live in an age of church shopping, and so sometimes we just get too comfortable with the way things are, and we get too used to being in a specific kind of church, and that might prevent us from spreading the gospel we need to, or in the way that we need to. Also, what does evangelism, if we're going to spread the gospel, what does that require from us on a personal, individual level? It requires study, a lot of study. Okay. A willingness and openness.
I think if we're a little bit scared to go out and do something, if we really want to, going up with somebody that's seasoned and going out and doing personal work and go along with them and just see how things are done, and then, you know, eventually you'll fit right in.
Yeah. And as far as resources and physically, what does it require from us to go out and spread the word? Yeah. And I think sometimes that whole complacency factor comes in. And say, well, you know, I like the way things are right now, and I like having my Saturday night the way it is, or I like sleeping on Sunday afternoons. And you know that if you spread the word, and I know that seems shallow, but, you know, maybe it enters into some of our minds. But, you know, if you spread the word, maybe your schedule's going to change around a little bit. Maybe you'll have to spend some gas money to get back and forth. So maybe sometimes that complacency and that comfort of where we are can play a part in why we struggle to spread the gospel. Secondly, we're talking about complacency, first of all. Secondly, do you think sometimes we lose that sense of urgency of the gospel message? Sometimes we forget how badly that is needed. And we forget that God has entrusted us with a message that has the ability to save souls through Jesus Christ. And we're not just dealing with, you know, cold hard facts and cold hard evidence. We're dealing with a message of salvation, a message of love from Jesus Christ. And that has to be spread. That's a vital message, and that's urgent. I like in 2 Kings 7, if you want to turn over there with me. 2 Kings 7, we remember the situation where Ben-Hadad had surrounded Samaria. And because of that siege and that surrounding, there was this great famine in the land. And we read about these four lepers in 2 Kings 7 and verse 3. It says, "Now there were four leprous men at the entrance of the gate, and they said to one another, 'Why are we sitting here until we die? If we say we will enter the city, the famine is in the city, and we shall die there. And if we sit here, we die also. Now therefore come, let us surrender to the army of the Syrians. If they keep us alive, we shall live, and if they kill us, we shall die.' And they rose at twilight to go to the camp of the Syrians, and when they had come to the outskirts of the Syrian camp, to their surprise, no one was there. For the Lord had caused the army of the Syrians to hear the noise of chariots and the noise of horses, the noise of a great army. So they said to one another, 'Look, the king of Israel has hired against us the king of the Hittites, the king of the Egyptians, to attack us.' Therefore they arose and fled at twilight and left the camp intact, their tents, their horses, and their donkeys, and they fled for their lives. And when these lepers came to the outskirts of the camp, they went into one tent and ate and drank and carried from it silver and gold and clothing and went and hid them. Then they came back and entered another tent and carried some from there also and went and hid it. Then they said to one another, 'We are not doing right. This day is a day of good news, and we remain silent. If we wait until morning light, some punishment will come upon us. Now therefore come, let us go and tell the king's household.'" They had found this army who had fled, and they realized this is a day of good news. This is an urgent message to get to the people. Perhaps the famine could be over and maybe the land would be restored once again. They had this good news and they said, we're not doing right by not telling. And, you know, we need to have that same sense of urgency that we have this message, we have this good news, and we're wasting it if we're not telling it. We need to feel for lost souls and realize that urgency. So sometimes we might lose that sense of urgency. Sometimes we might be complacent. And thirdly, let me suggest to you, sometimes it seems we would rather just spend our time judging the soil than sowing the word. Sometimes we'd rather spend our time judging the soil rather than sowing the seed. Let's look in Matthew 13 at the parable of the sower. We'll note a couple of things there. Matthew chapter 13 and verse 3. Jesus spoke this parable. He says, "Behold, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them. Some fell on stony places where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. But others fell on good ground and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Now, when we think about the way that seed is sown or the way that seed is planted today, how is that done today? Okay. What's that?
Some is still broadcast
like that? Yeah. And a lot of times, the way I think about it, I'm definitely no expert in this, but that, you know, you have this machine, and from what I remember learning about it, it'll punch direct holes in the ground, you know, and space it out to where there's not too much seed in each part, and it'll punch it in the good ground and punch a specific hole, put the seed in, maybe cover it up with some dirt, and the machine will do all of that for you, and it'll evenly space everything and go along, and it's a very accurate and a very precise process. And I'm sure you yield a good crop because of that. But when you look at Jesus' parable, how was seed sown in ancient times? Was it this very specific process with a machine and all of that? How was that sown in those times in the parable here? It was a parable or a sower with a large bag going around and tossing the seed. And was this just this perfect, specific, accurate process? No, and I think we see a testament of that in the parable that, you know, some of his seed, it's not like it's all on good ground. Some of it fell on the wayside on this kind of pathway, compacted dirt. Some fell on thorns. Some fell on rocky soil. Was the sower finding these specific areas and only the good soil and planting seeds there? Or was he just trusting God to let it fall where it would? He was just throwing it and letting it fall where it would and trusting that some would fall on that good ground. And let me ask you, what needs to be our mindset in sowing God's Word? I think sometimes we spend more time judging the soil than we do sowing the seed. Sometimes without thinking, We'll look at people and say, well, you know, that guy would never obey the Word in a million years. You know, I could talk to him about the Bible, but, you know, he wouldn't even listen to me. I just know the kind of person he is. Or we look at that girl and say, well, you know, she doesn't have a spiritual bone in her body. What, you know, why would I invite her to church or why would I talk to her about the Word? It would not do any good. But let's ask ourselves this question before we start judging the soil in that way. Don't the people we know of, and we all know of people who need it, don't the people we know of who are living in sin and who have sin in their lives, don't they deserve to hear the Word of Jesus Christ? Don't they deserve to hear that and see how that's going to fall on their hearts and let God and let them figure out what that effect is on their soil? I think we know the answer to that. Rather than judge that soil, we need to be sowing the seed. That's our primary concern. In Acts chapter 9, we remember Jesus came to the disciple Ananias, and he came to him in a vision. And what did Jesus tell Ananias to do there in chapter 9? He said, go and meet with Saul of Tarsus. And how does Ananias respond to that? Well, he went to see him, but first of all, what was the... Right. Yeah, and he says, well, you know, I've...
You know, he's a persecutor.
Yeah.
He said, I know, but you go. And he said, okay, I go. He obeyed God.
Yeah, he said, you know, I'm not so sure about this guy. He's a persecutor of Christians. But Jesus says to him, you go. Arise and go. And I'll tell you, I'm sure glad that Ananias went, because I've had the same idea of some people before that, you know, well, I don't know about that guy, I don't know about that girl. But Jesus' answer to us when we have questions like that is arise and go. Are there any questions or comments about that? Okay, so sometimes we're reluctant because of complacency. We like how things are, we're content. Sometimes because we lose that sense of urgency. Sometimes because we judge the soil rather than sowing the seed. And finally, and this is one we talk about probably most of all, are there various fears that come into play when we talk about sowing the seed and we're talking about spreading the word? What are some of the fears that we associate with that and that come into our minds, sometimes inevitably? Yeah. Fear of rejection. You know, nobody likes to hear no when they propose something to someone, and nobody likes to be turned down like that. What else? Sure. Okay, fear of leading someone in the wrong direction. What else? About a lack of knowledge. Fear that we don't know enough, we're going to be asked questions that we don't know the answer to. And, you know, we might ask that question, well, what if they ask something and I don't know the answer? I think the better question is, what if they ask something and you don't know the answer, and then you study it both and you both learn the answer? That's probably the better question there. Maybe the fear that we'll be mistreated. You know, the fear that, nobody likes to be treated in an unkind fashion if you try and present something to someone. Like we talked about earlier, the fear of losing relationships. If we're talking about family or friends, that's going to destroy a relationship if we talk to them about that. I think it's going to help us to go over to Exodus 3, and we see some of these same fears in Moses, I think. In Exodus 3, in verse 11, Moses asked God, he says, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? And how does God answer him? Yeah, who are you, Moses? The question is not who you are, it's who I am. And I'm going to be with you. And we need to remember that as we sow the word. In verse 13 there, Moses asked God, he says, well, you know, when they ask me about you, what am I going to say to them? What do I say to them when they ask me about you? And what does God answer him? Oh, yeah. Yeah, tell them that I am sent you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Another concern Moses has in verse 1 of chapter 4, Moses says, well, Lord, what if they don't believe me? Isn't that a question we ask sometimes? What if they don't believe me? And God gives him a great answer. What does he say? He says, Moses, what's that in your hand? What's that in our hand? Yeah, it gives him the rod, doesn't he? And I think the same answer is answered to us. What if they don't believe me? God says, what's that in your hand? We need to realize the power of the message that we have and the power of the God that we serve, and that he's a God who's going to be with us in our efforts. If we go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, notice what Paul says here. In verse 5, he says, who then is Paul, and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed, as the Lord gave to each one? I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. Now he who plants and he who waters are one, and each one will receive his own reward according to his own labor. What does Paul say is our job in evangelism? What should our effort be? To sow the seed. He says our job, our efforts in evangelism are to spread the word, to get the word out there, to plant the word, and to water the word. And what does God do with that message that we've sowed? God gives the increase. And I'll tell you, I find great comfort in that. Because if somebody doesn't obey, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're a bad teacher, or that we haven't taught them well, or that we haven't done all that we have. As in that parable of the sower, it could be that their hearts are not receptive to the message. That could be the reason they don't obey. So our job is, as we said, to sow and water that seed, and leave it up to God and leave it up to the hearer to decide what that does in their hearts and on their soil. I'll tell you something that's so surprising and sometimes is so troubling to me. I've heard a lot of sermons and, you know, sat through a lot of Bible classes on evangelism, and I've heard a lot of the things that we've talked about tonight and some of these fears that we have, some of these reluctancies that we have. And we can sit here and talk about these different things and talk about, you know, the need for the gospel in the world, and that's all true. The gospel is very needed in the world. But what troubles me is when I hear people or when I start thinking, when we go out in the world, what troubles me is when people start saying, well, the reason that the gospel is not getting out there is because people don't want to accept it. And that's just not true. I don't think we need to blame everybody else for our lack of effort in spreading the gospel. We need to realize that the Bible is still popular and that Jesus is still needed and still wanted in the Christian world. Bible is still the bestseller. Christian literature is through the roof. And there's still a high demand for Jesus Christ. And the reason that the gospel is not getting to people is not because they're not going to be receptive of it. It's because oftentimes we have these fears and these reluctancies. In Matthew chapter 28 in the Great Commission, what's that? Yeah, 28 and verse 19 in the Great Commission. I think Christ there gives us essentially everything we need to know in order to spread His Word. He tells us who to listen to while we're spreading. He says in verse 18, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. So we get our teaching, we get our authority from Christ. He tells us what we're supposed to do. He says in verse 19, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. That's the task ahead of us. He tells us what it means to make a disciple. He says baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. He tells us what to do after that. He says teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And finally, he tells us where he's going to be while his disciples are spreading the word. And where is that? He said, "Lo, I am always with you." And he said to his disciples, even to the end of the age. And that's something we can't forget in our efforts to spread the gospel. Jesus is always with us in that. And as Paul said, the sower is nothing. What is something is the word of God that we're sowing and the Lord who we're sowing for. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah, exactly. And all of us know people that need the gospel. And it's just a question of what's keeping you from telling them. Any other questions? I appreciate your comments very much.